Come with us and ask her. I'm asking you. No answer. No further conversation. I sensed them tensing up. I watched Leonid's face, saw his eyes widen and his head duck forward in a tiny nod. They came straight for me, together. I pushed off the wall behind me and put my fists against my chest and stuck my elbows out like airplane wings and charged them as hard as they were charging me. We met at a singular point, like a collapsing triangle, and my elbows caught both of them full in the face. On my right, I felt the short guy's upper teeth punch out, and on my left, I felt Leonid's lower jaw give way. Impact equals mass times velocity, squared. I had plenty of mass, but my shoes were spongy and my feet were slick inside them from the heat, and so my velocity was slower than it might have been, which reduced the impact a little, which left them both on their feet, which gave me a little more work to do. I spun back instantly and clubbed the short guy with an enormous roundhouse right to the ear. No style, no finesse, just a big, ugly punch. His ear flattened against his head and took some of the force away, but plenty more went straight on through the crushed gristle into his skull. His neck snapped sideways, and he hit his other ear with his own far shoulder. By that point, I was squelching back the other way in my lousy footwear and driving my elbow deep into Leonid's gut. Same place I had hit him in Penn Station, but 10 times harder. I almost popped his spine out of his back. I used the bounce to jump in the other direction to the short guy again. He was hunching away and ready for a standing 8 count. I put a low right in his kidney. That straightened him up and spun him around toward me. I bent my knees and drove forward and butted him between the eyes. Explosive. Whatever bones my elbow hadn't broken gave way and he went down like a sack. Leonid tapped me on the shoulder with his knuckle duster. He thought it was a punch, but in his depleted state a tap was all he could manage. I took my time and wound up and aimed carefully and dropped him with an uppercut to the jaw. His jaw was already broken from my elbow. Now it got broken a little more. Bone and flesh spattered out in a lazy red arc and showed up quite clearly in the streetlights. Teeth, I figured, and maybe part of his tongue. I was a little shaken. As always, excess adrenaline was burning me up. The adrenal gland is a slow son of a bitch. Then it overcompensates. Too much, too late. I took 10 seconds to get my breath, 10 more to calm down. Then I hauled both guys across the sidewalk and into a sitting position against the wall where I had been standing. Their hooded sweatshirts stretched a yard long as I was hauling on them. Cheap clothes, disposable, in case they had gotten soaked with my blood. I got the two guys positioned so they wouldn't fall over and choke, and then I dislocated their right elbows. They were both right-handed, and the odds were that I would be seeing them again, in which case I wanted them out of action. No permanent damage. 3 weeks in a light cast would fix them up, good as new. They had cell phones in their pockets. I took both of them. Both had my picture. Both call registers were blank. There was nothing else, no money, no keys, no material evidence, no clue as to where they had come from. No likelihood that they would be in a position to tell me any time soon, either. I had hit them too hard. They were out for the count. And even when they woke up, there was no guarantee they would remember anything anyway. Maybe not even their names. Concussion has unpredictable effects. Paramedics aren't kidding around when they ask concussion victims what day it is and who the president is. No regrets on my part. Better to err on the side of safety. Guys in fights who think ahead of the aftermath usually don't get that far. They become the aftermath. So no regrets, but no net gain either, which was frustrating. Not even the brass knuckles fit my hand. I tried both sets on, and they were way too small. I dropped them down a storm drain 20 feet away. Their car was still idling at the curb. It had New York plates. No navigation system, therefore no digital memory with a base location. I found a rental agreement in the door pocket made out to a name I had never heard, and a London address that I assumed was fake. In the glove box, I found instruction manuals for the car, and a small spiral notebook and a ballpoint pen. The notebook had nothing written in it. I took the pen and walked back to the two guys and held Leonard's head steady with my left palm clamped down hard. Then I wrote on his forehead with the ballpoint, digging deep in his skin and tracing big letters over and over again for clarity. I wrote, "Lila, call me." Then I stole their car and drove away. Chapter 54. I drove south on 2nd Avenue and took 50th Street all the way east to the end and dumped the car in a hydrant half a block from the FDR Drive. I hoped the guys from the 17th Precinct would find it and get suspicious and run some tests. Clothes are disposable. Cars, not so much. If Lila's people had used that Impala to drive away from the Hammer attack, then there would be some trace evidence inside. I couldn't see any with the naked eye, but CSI units don't rely on human vision alone. I wiped the wheel and the shifter and the door handles with the tail of my shirt. Then I dropped the keys down a grade and walked back to 2nd and stood in a shadow and looked for a cab. There was a decent river of traffic flowing downtown, and each car was lit up by the headlights behind it. I could see how many people were inside each vehicle. I was mindful of Theresa Lee's information. Fake taxis, circling uptown on 10th, down on 2nd, one guy in the front, two in the back. I waited for a cab that was definitively empty, apart from its driver, and I stepped out and flagged it down. The driver was a Sikh from India with a turban and a full beard and very little English. Not a cop. He took me south to Union Square. I got out there and sat on a bench in the dark and watched the rats. Union Square is the best place in the city to see them. By day, the Parks Department dumps blood and bone fertilizer on the flower beds. By night, the rats come out and feast on it. At 4 o'clock, I fell asleep. At 5 o'clock, one of the captured phones vibrated in my pocket. I woke up and spent the second checking left and right and behind, and then I fumbled the phone out of my pants. It wasn't ringing, just buzzing away to itself. Silent mode. The small monochrome window on the front said, "Restricted call." I opened it up, and the big color screen on the inside said the same thing. I put the phone to my ear and said,